Take your Bibles, if you would, tonight, John chapter 19. And again, I would just covet your prayers for our church. Satan has been on the attack in the families of our church, and it seems like the last 8 days I've been talking to somebody about something that's going on in their family life that's a real serious and tragic concern. But I just ask you to, you know, when God blesses, Satan attacks. And so we just need, as the men pray and as I'm sure the ladies pray after Wednesday night when we get together, we just need to ask God to put a hedge of protection around our church, around each of our folks, that God would just be with them and protect them from Satan attacks. All right, when we left Jesus last week, he had been taken to Pilate. He had been examined by Pilate, and Pilate had come to had said, "I find no fault in him." And as the Jews continued to clamor for Jesus to be put to death, Pilate reminded them of a custom that the Romans had at Passover time to release a prisoner unto them. And so he asked them, "Would you that I release unto you the King of the Jews?" And the crowd, led by the members of the Sanhedrin, the high priest, cried out, "Not this man, but Barabbas." And John tells us that Barabbas was a robber. So we start tonight from that point in chapter 19, verse 1. "Then Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him." Pilate wanted, he was trying to get out of this situation. He didn't want to have to put Jesus to death, nor did he want to, and he didn't want to do what the Jewish leaders. If you remember, they hated each other. He did not want to capitulate to them. So he was hoping to draw on the sympathy of the crowd. He wanted to show them how ridiculous it was for their leaders to charge Jesus with being a king. And so, in a perverse sort of way, he took Jesus and had him scourged. Now, again, he'd already said, "I find no fault in him." He whipped an innocent man. And again, the Romans, they prided themselves on their justice system. I'm sure there were corrupt parts of it, but they prided themselves on how fair and just their system was. But here was Pilate having an innocent man be whipped. And so as they did it, they tied Jesus to a pole. They took off his clothes, and they took a whip, and they whipped him. I don't know how many throngs were on the whip. I'm sure there were more than one. But each of those pieces of whip had a small piece of metal or a piece of bone tied to the end of it. And every lash, and it was probably 39 lashes, a Roman soldier, if he killed somebody by whipping them, was put to death, because they weren't supposed to kill them when they whipped them. And so they limited it to 39 lashes. But every time, every lash, however many pieces of whip there were on the, it dug into Jesus's back, and as the soldier pulled it back, it took pieces of flesh off of his back. Verse 2, "And the soldiers plaited a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe." A king needed a crown. And so they took branches from a thorn bush, not like a little rose bush with little thorns, but a bush that had thorns on it that were probably 2 inches or so. And they I'm sure they had gloves on when they put it together, thick gloves. But they plaited a thorn and jammed it down on his head, and those thorns dug into his flesh as well. King needed a robe, so they borrowed one of the soldiers' robe, a purple one, and put it on Jesus. And said in verse 3, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they smote him with their hands. So a king must receive homage. And so they mockingly said, "Hail, King of the Jews." And as they did, they slapped and punched Jesus with their fists in the face. Pilate went back out to the crowd, verse 4, therefore went forth again, and saith unto them, Behold, I bring him forth to you, that ye may know that I find no fault in him. So again, second time that Pilate had proclaimed that Christ was innocent. And yet, even though he had just given the order to scourge Jesus. Then verse 5, then came Jesus forth, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said unto them, Behold the man. Behold the man. I think in derision, making fun of Jesus. Behold the man. And I think what he was saying, he was saying, hey, look at this poor, pitiful man. Your rulers have claimed that he claims to be a king. Look at him. How can one like this be a king? If this was a king, where is his subjects? Why wouldn't they protect him from me? And so I think there was scorn and perhaps a little bit of pity mixed in to Pilate's voice as he said, Behold the man. And then in verse 6, when the chief priests, therefore, and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, Crucify him, crucify him. Pilate saith unto them, Take ye him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. If there was any pity in Pilate, there certainly was none in the chief priest, because they thundered back with the words, Crucify him, put him to death, execute him. The crowd took up the chant, and it turned into a shouting match. Pilate cried back to him, said, Well, if you want him crucified, you take him and crucify him, because I find no fault in him. This is a third time. This was the Roman authority, the highest Roman authority in Jerusalem. Three times avowing that as he examined Jesus, he said, there's nothing guilty of death in this man. In fact, I find no fault in him. I find nothing that he's done wrong. And yet he says, if you want him crucified, take him and crucify him yourself. Now, if they had done that, it would be against the law. Jews did not have the legal right to put anybody to death. They did not have the legal right to crucify. So if they had taken him and crucified him, it would have been an unlawful act. It would have been like a lynching mob. And again, if you look at the Roman system of justice, which was known for its fairness and its justice, you would say at this particular point, it failed miserably. Again, three times, find nothing wrong. Nothing guilty in this man. Verse 7, the Jews answered him, We have a law, and by our law he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God. Again, the Jews were trying to get Jesus crucified with a political crime. They said he's leading a revolt against Caesar. He needs to be put to death because he's going to raise an insurrection. And so when they couldn't get Pilate to find him guilty of that charge, they changed the charge. And they changed the charge from a political charge to a religious charge. They said, by our law, Jesus should die because he has made himself the Son of God. At least in this charge, they had a semblance of truth. Jesus had made such a claim. He had revealed himself as the Son of God. None of them accepted it. None of them believed it. But they wanted Jesus put to death for the sin of blasphemy, claiming to be the Son of God. When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he was the more afraid. Now, at that point, when they changed the charge in the middle of this ordeal, Pilate should have just said, Hey, I'm done. I'm not going to put him to death. I'm done. Soldiers dispersed the crowd. I'm throwing the case out of court. Claiming to be the Son of God broke no Roman law. Okay? But Pilate, like most Romans, was superstitious. And so when he heard the words, the Son of God, it frightened him. Now remember, his wife had just sent him a note saying, don't have anything to do with just this just man. I've suffered terribly in a dream because of him. And so, I mean, when he got that note, he was unnerved even more. He had no concept of a Jewish Messiah, but the emperor, deity, was assigned to the emperor. So at least he was familiar with the concept of a man being called God. So in verse 9, and Pilate went again into the judgment hall and saith unto Jesus, whence art thou? But Jesus gave him no answer. Pilate went back and said, where'd you come from? Where do you originate at? Now, he already knew he was from Galilee because he'd sent him to Herod, who was in town. He's trying to get out of it that way by sending him to Herod, who ruled Galilee. And said, so tell me, whence art thou? And notice it says, Jesus gave him no answer. Now, some have speculated that Jesus kept quiet because of exhaustion. After the beating that he took with the whip, that he didn't have the strength to respond. And it's true, after the scourging, he only said one more thing. We're going to read that in the next verse. But when we get to verse 11 and you see what Jesus said to Pilate, you'd have to say, this is not a response from a man that is exhausted. No, his silence, and by the way, his silence wasn't a new thing. I mean, from the beginning of the trial, Jesus had spoken very, very little. When somebody asked him an insincere or loaded question, he did not answer it, okay? And again, Pilate had shown that his objective was to just get out of this situation without having to do anything. And if Jesus had answered his question, I mean, if Jesus would have said, well, you want to know where I came from? I came from God. I've always existed. I mean, there's never been a time that I didn't exist. I've always existed. I came to this earth via a virgin birth. God becoming man. Jesus knew that if he would have answered Pilate's question, Pilate wouldn't have believed one minute of it. He wouldn't have believed it at all. And so, because it served no purpose, Jesus kept silent. He only spoke when it was necessary. I mean, the chief priest and Pilate thought that they had Jesus on trial before them. Really, they were on trial before him. I mean, he was in charge of how the trial progressed, and he was going to die, but he would die as a divine sacrifice. He would die as the Son of God, and so he only answered questions that revealed that truth. In verse 10, you can see Pilate, he's exasperated. Then saith Pilate unto him, speakest thou not unto me? Knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee, and I have power to release thee? That word me, speakest thou not unto me, it's emphatic. What Pilate was saying is, don't you know who I am? How can you remain silent before me? I have the power. I have the power. I can release you. I can let you go. Or I have the power to crucify you. Don't you know who you're talking to? Don't you know that I hold your life in my hands? And yet, Jesus ignored him. Now, look at verse 11. Jesus answered, thou couldest have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. Therefore, he that delivereth me unto thee hath the greater sin. Doesn't sound like an exhausted man to me. Jesus was saying, look, you say you have power to release me and power to crucify me. You don't have any power at all except that power that's been given to you from above. Jesus was not talking about the Sanhedrin. He was not talking about the Roman emperor. When Jesus said from above, the power from above, he was talking about God. talking about God. In Romans 13:1, Paul wrote this, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God." The power that be, the powers that be, are ordained of God. Here's what Jesus was saying. The institution of government was ordained by God. Doesn't mean that God approves every government or every act of every government, but he has ordained the institution of government. Pilate was the appointed official of that government. So in a sense, Pilate had been granted his authority from above or from God. And so Jesus said, you wouldn't have this power unless it was given to you by God, unless this government was ordained of God. Then he said something else. Now look at the next phrase. A lot of people have stumbled on this next phrase. Therefore, he that delivereth me unto thee hath the greater sin. Now, again, he wasn't talking about God delivering Jesus unto Pilate. He wasn't talking about God. Who he was talking about in that verse was Caiaphas, the high priest. He led the council that brought Jesus to Pilate. And again, you might read it and say, well, was Jesus simply saying that Caiaphas was a greater sinner than Pilate? No. What he was saying, and you got to look at that word therefore. That word therefore in the English is a translation of the Greek words diateto, which means because of this. And so, nope, you wouldn't have any power at all. Thou couldest have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. So you have power from God. Government has been ordained by God, and in that sense, you have been given power by God. But he that, because of this, he that delivereth me unto you, Caiaphas, hath the greater sin. Caiaphas was the authority in the religious organization, again, that was ordained by God. Now, he, like a political ruler, could abuse that power, but he was just like Pilate was the representative of the government, Caiaphas was the representative of the religious authority. If Caiaphas had just killed Jesus himself, he would have been a murderer. But Jesus wouldn't have said this about him. But as the high priest, again, the religious authority, he used his spiritual authority that he got from God to cause the governmental authority, Pilate, who got his authority from God, to put the Son of God to death. What Jesus was saying is, hey, Pilate's manipulating the authority that he has to his own end. Caiaphas is manipulating the authority that he has to his own end. And because Caiaphas has done that, has used the spiritual or religious authority that God gave him to cause the government to abuse the authority that God's given them, Caiaphas has the greater sin. Now, again, we're going to close on this verse, but I would just tell you that every preacher, every pastor, every priest, every bishop, everybody that is in authority in religion, and every politician that is in authority because of their office, if they use that authority, which has been ordained by God, if they use that authority for their own personal gain, for their own private end, Jesus says, what he's saying is, they are going to be judged by God. Now, I don't need to tell you tonight, there are many, many, many in those positions that have done exactly that. They have used the authority that's been given to them, ordained by God for their own personal end. And I would just say tonight to them, and I know there's nobody here like that, I mean, but any gain they've achieved or they think they've achieved is going to be more than offset by the account they're going to have to give to God and the punishment that God is going to mete out on them for misusing that authority. And so when we pray for people in position in the spiritual realm and in the political realm, we need to pray that, again, that they will not abuse the power that God has given them to their own end. To their own end. Because they're going to be held accountable for it.